Welcome back to an all-new episode of Dirtcast. I am your co-host, Megan Reynolds.
And I'm your other co-host, Madeline Davies.
Later on in this episode, we will be talking to Molly Lambert, a writer and host of the podcast Night Call about true crime documentaries and our obsession with them.
The fact that a lot of these serial killers are mediocre white dudes and then that they get sort of like a cult of personality around them is gross, you know? I feel like especially with Ted Bundy, that's what I've been feeling.
Before we do that, Maddie, how are you?
I'm good. You're looking at me like you're going to stab me.
No, I'm just tired. We've been sitting in here for a while.
I was being very nitpicky with Megan.
You were. And I love that. So
look, this show needs a structure somehow.
That's true. So I'm not going to kill Maddie, even though it would be fitting for a podcast about talking about true crime.
Well, if I show up dead, there's like a good red herring.
Yeah. But I mean, if anyone, the amount of times I've threatened murder just in general in my life, it would not be surprising. But no, Maddie's alive. I'm not going to kill her. You seem to be doing fine.
Yeah, as I told you before we started, the second pipe in 2 weeks burst in my apartment. So New York City brownstone living is as glamorous as it seems.
That's cool. That's fun for you.
But, you know, just trucking through it.
Yeah, that's good.
Hopefully they're fixing the problem.
That's
and
nice.
The hole in my ceiling will go away.
I hope that for you as well.
Thank you.
Because it sounds inconvenient at the minimum.
Yeah, at minimum.
Yeah.
It's fine. Good. It could be worse.
I mean, at least your apartment is still, like, there.
I have a home.
Yeah. There's a hole in the ceiling.
Yeah. And, in two separate rooms, just big assholes.
That has...
Big assholes.
So that's good.
But, yeah, other than that, can't complain.
Cool.
Megan, how are you?
I don't know. I'm fine. It's warm out, which is wonderful, but also fucked up because
it shouldn't be.
It should not be. It's the beginning of February. It should still be cold. I had no idea what jacket to wear this morning.
Yeah.
I made a choice that I think is correct, but I'm sure as night falls, I will freezing.
I think you're going to be
it's
all
okay.
Right.
We'll see what happens. You
also,
know?
Like by the time this podcast comes out, it maybe will have like snowed 3 feet. because you just truly cannot predict any of this.
I would love that actually because that'd be nice. I feel like we haven't had a big snow. I'd love a snow.
No, thanks.
Really? Just fun to look at
second. Yeah. I like snow Christmas and New Year's.
Oh, that's it?
Well, the problem in New York is that it just gets so dirty.
It is disgusting. That's
so
true.
So it's like you have like, it's really beautiful at first. And
you're
like, oh my God, the city is just like this picturesque blanket of
like
downy
romance
fluff.
And snow and whatever, right?
And then within 3 hours, it's just like gray slop.
Yeah.
And
looks like
puddles that go up to your ankles, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So I that's my problem with
it. Oh, interesting. I don't mind it. I like it. I mean, I don't like the Frappuccino puddles. Those are gross. But all right. Well, I mean, I think it's not going to snow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it'll be summer in like 2 weeks.
Do you want to hear like kind of a very good insight into my childhood?
I do.
Which is that if I saw like a blanket of fresh snow and thought it was beautiful, I would walk through it because I was like, it should be destroyed by someone who loves it.
Oh, my God.
And I just like didn't. I didn't trust, like, my fellow neighbor children to, like, respect the beauty of this prime nature.
Wow. Okay. That's cool.
Says a lot about me.
It does.
I think I carry some of that with me to this day.
You do. That is nice, and that is enough about the both of us.
Yeah.
On Oops the Podcast, join me, comedian Giulio Gallerati, as I examine everyday life, the mistakes, the bad decisions, the goals, the jokes, the social engagements, and all things in between. I'm joined every week by producer and personal confidant Ryan Lynch, various other comedians for witty, candid, and intoxicating conversation. Our listeners love Oops for sophisticated banter, aka your mom could listen, and many feel like they're in the room with us chopping it up with old pals. You can find every episode of the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube.
We went from talking about dirty snow slop to the dirtiest dirt of the week.
We're getting so much better at these transitions. Okay. Oh, this first item feels triggering. Let's do it.
I love to be triggered.
I feel attacked. Okay. The Super Bowl happened on Sunday. The New England Patriots played the Los Angeles Rams. I almost said St. Louis, but not anymore. It was a really boring game. Tom Brady sucks.
I didn't watch.
I did, and it was bad. And the halftime show was like one of the most boring halftime shows I've seen that I can remember seeing in my lifetime. It was the Motley Crue of Maroon 5,
yeah,
Travis Scott, and Big Boy.
I just want to say I've always had a grudge against Maroon 5, and now I can add the fact that they're fucking scabs.
Yeah, they are scabs.
To the list of reasons why I don't like them.
Yeah.
And same with you, Travis Scott, and same with you, Big Boy.
No one, lots of people turn down.
I kneel with Kaepernick.
Maddie is kneeling as we speak. A lot of people turned down the Super Bowl halftime show. Maroon 5, Travis Scott, and Big Boy.
Not so much.
Did not. Maroon 5's performance was especially noxious. My crush on Adam Levine, which had endured for some time, ended.
I just want to let that just simmer.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Megan's crush on Adam Levine, uh-huh, which lasted some time.
It did.
Okay, carry on.
Thank you so much. It came, it died on Sunday night,
wow,
the middle of the Super Bowl halftime show. It was roughly around when he arrived on stage.
Oh, so very soon.
I'm thinking, actually. No, I think it was when he removed, when he was in the tank top.
I was going to ask it before or after he popped the top.
No, it was when he took off like his weird jacket, and then he was in that tank top. And then when he removed his tank top to reveal his man nipples, which were not banned by CBS, and the most, like, upsetting tattoos. I mean, I knew his tattoos were bad, but seeing them in HD, they're really bad.
It was like his tattoos are like a parody of a Red Hot Chili Peppers song.
He has California in enormous letters in an arch tattooed over his tum-tum.
Yeah, that's like, I'm almost like, that's like what, like, you would joke that, like, Anthony Kiedis has.
Yeah. He has really bad tattoos. He's a bad singer. He came out, he was bad.
I mean, as I once described him, a sentient leather wrist cuff.
He is.
A tribal tattoo come to life.
He is both of those things. And again, sometimes the heart wants what it wants, but
sure,
my heart has grown up and has realized that he's disgusting.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I feel great. I no longer have a crush on him, and I would like to move on to...
Let's hope Binhati Prinsloo does.
I think Binhati Prinsloo is somehow fine with what she's, yeah, what her lot in life.
Sure.
Here's a fun story that I love. Liam Neeson almost made a racist murder, but he is glad that he did not.
Again, same.
Like, holy shit. This story is nuts. Here's what happened. This is from he did an interview with The Independent. Here's the quote.
I'll tell you a story. This is true. I'm not going to use any names, but I was away and I came back and she told me she had been raped, but she handled the situation of the rape in the most extraordinary way. But my immediate reaction was, I asked, did she know who it was? No. What color were they? She said it was a black person. I went up and down areas with a cosh, hoping I'd be approached by somebody. I'm ashamed to say that. And I did it for maybe a week, hoping some black bastard would come out of a pub and have a go at me about something, you know, so that I could kill him.
It's one of these things where, like, not to just, like, give someone who doesn't deserve the benefit of the doubt the benefit of the doubt. I feel like what he's trying to do is be like, yes, I had racist thoughts. And right. I worked through them and evolved from them. And, like, he's doing what, like, white people should do more often, right? Is, like, recognize our own prejudices.
Sure.
And, you know, confront that and grapple with ourselves.
Sure.
But just, like, the setting of just doing it in the movie. Like, do it internally, first of
all. Don't do it in an interview, like, at a press junket, you lunatic.
And I love that his coworker at the end of the story just goes, holy shit.
Can you imagine sitting next to Liam Neeson and then he confesses that he had almost did a racist murder not too long ago and you're just like...
I mean, it probably was like...
I mean, a while ago.
Yeah. This was like in like the early 80s, right?
Still, like in my lifetime at least.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's whatever. I mean, okay, he didn't do it, so we should be happy for that.
Yeah. Also, just like, I just imagine him like walking around Belfast sure. with a club...
Just like, Liam Neeson, man. Okay.
I'm glad that he's like confronted that part of his life.
Yes.
I think it was a weird place to share it.
Definitely.
I saw someone tweeted something very funny that was like, Liam Neeson just acted out the no one meme in real life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that tweet also.
I agree. Also, he's known to have one of the biggest penises in Hollywood.
What? He is?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, how big?
Like, I don't know. Like
large.
Big. Yeah.
Okay.
Just something else to just wanted to, you know.
Cool.
Did you see Widows?
I did.
I thought him and Viola Davis were like so hot together in Widows.
The way that they kissed in the beginning was disgusting to me. Mm. I don't know if I liked. I feel like I fell asleep at Widow. I fell asleep during Widows. I was gonna say didn't wake up, but clearly I did because I'm
alive.
Right here. No, I fell asleep and I missed the ending.
Oh.
Is that right? Yeah, I don't. It was fine.
I really liked it.
Maybe I'll watch it again.
Daniel Kaluuya is very scary in it.
He was very scary in it. I'll give you that. Well, cool. I'm glad that I remain happy that Liam Neeson did not make a racist murder.
Yeah. And we're just going to like keep on trucking.
Yep.
We're staying in the British Isles for
this
one.
Here we go. I love it. Across the pond.
21 Savage.
Yes.
Who everyone thought was from Atlanta.
Yep.
Is a British national. And was taken and was arrested by ICE. And I just want to say something very clear at the beginning of this. I don't think any of that is funny. Like,
right.
I think ICE is a horrible thing. I think it should be abolished. I don't think, even if though he's like a famous person, I don't think it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
The memes that have come out of this, however, have been delightful.
There were a lot of 21 Savage memes that I believe at one point on Sunday, I opened Twitter, looked for 1 second, and then was like, I'm going to close my computer now. And I did, and I felt much better about myself and life. But yeah.
Saw one that was just like 21 Savage sips lean like this, and it was the pinky out.
Oh, my God.
Memes are just like so perfect for like where my brain is at, where it's just like really simple and just like a picture.
I mean, that is nice. I mean, all right. So everyone thought he was from Atlanta because he talks about Atlanta almost exclusively in his music.
Yeah.
Well,
and he did grow up there.
Yeah.
He, like, moved there as a child.
Right. So it's not, I mean, he's whatever. But he basically, he overstayed his visa.
Well, I mean, what's kind of fucked up is that ICE clearly was trying to, like, make an example out of him.
Right.
Because he had applied for a visa that is pending.
Right.
And, like, I don't know. It's just so – I hate everybody.
Yeah.
I hate the government, man.
Okay.
But, yeah, he faces deportation and a 10-year ban from the States, which is, like, he's at the height of his career. And,
yeah, I mean, would suck.
Of course, there's, like, people at risk of deportation that are in far riskier situations. But regardless, it's really gross.
So that's cool. Best of luck. What is this? Oh, no. Okay, actually, I've changed my tune. A Goop series is coming to Netflix. I feel okay with this.
Yes. I mean...
I'll watch it.
I won't.
I'll watch it.
I mean, she, like...
But what is it gonna... Like, what is she even gonna do, you know?
I just feel like the, like, pseudoscience of Goop is already, like... It's, like, all, like, anti-vax moms who, like, love that shit.
That's true.
And I don't know. I just don't need to know if that's, like, the people who need a voice right now.
I mean, it's definitely not. I'm just curious to see, like, how Gwyneth's whole thing, like, how Goop is going to, like, how they're going to make it into a series, like what exactly it's going to be. It's going to be like a docuseries about like a vagina eggs and also like not vaccinating your children. Is it going to be like some weird sort of like HGTV adjacent lifestyle content? Is it going to be, I'm curious. I will probably watch, my guess is it'll be like a 40 minute episode per thing. So I could probably do about half of that and make a decision from there.
Her show with a known pervert, Mari Vitale, was actually pretty good.
Oh, yeah, it was.
But that was just like about food.
It's like, I would not watch a Goop cooking show because I hate like Goop. I like Goop aesthetics when it comes to food, I think is so awful. Mm-hmm. I like don't care for that. But yeah, maybe I'm trying to think of what it is that I guess we'll just wait. We'll wait and see.
Yeah.
Unless we're dead before then.
Also, just like what a marketing whiz.
She's
Gwyneth Paltrow is like way smarter than
I will
any of us ever give her credit
for. It's true. It's true. And for that, congratulations.
Love to see a powerful woman in cashmere.
I will never forget the moment, the day when I was in a room with her. She didn't look as impressive as I thought.
Really? I think she is stunning.
When I was at the Goop conference, in Goop Health last January, I only saw her from like a distance. And then I think she passed me kind of when I was like out milling about in the hall. And I just thought that I was like, I was more impressed by Bryce Dallas Howard, who I saw in the bathroom.
Oh, not to go full like Carrie Bradshaw on you.
Can't wait.
But Gwyneth Paltrow, probably 2006, okay. I want to say,
okay.
was on the cover of Vogue, maybe 2005. And it is, I still think, like one of the most beautiful Vogue covers ever. She's like, has like a huge flower crown and it's just like,
very, oh, I know
like,
what you're earthy. Talking about. I guess I don't think she's like, I recognize that other people think that like she is, what's the word I'm looking for? Objectively attractive. I just don't think she is.
Yeah.
That's all.
She's beautiful. She's not attractive.
Yeah, she's beautiful. She has, she just looks a little bony.
Yes, she's very thin. But sort of, you know, that's her choice.
Raise her elbows.
Her body, her choice.
Her body.
That is what that saying is about.
Her body, her choice.
And here's some little sad news.
Uh-oh.
Tekashi 6ix9ine pled guilty on racketeering charges.
Okay.
Tekashi 6ix9ine, who was already going to court on child sexual abuse charges, has been arrested by the FBI, who I feel like that's kind of the end.
Yeah.
When they get to you.
When the feds get you, right.
What do we got? Yeah, so it was, he pled guilty to racketeering conspiracy and firearms charges.
Okay.
Also, for someone who was so fucking tough in his music and always talking about how he's a blood and shit, he snitched so fast.
I mean, oh, well.
He gave up so many names
Jesus
that I'm just like, what? I don't like, ooh, you're really.
Good luck to you, sir.
One
you're
going
to need it.
Hmm? One thing that our live show guest, Aja, and I were talking about backstage at our live show was how he was the sandwich guy at our neighborhood bodega. So it was a very quick rise and fall.
Yeah, just up and
couldn't
down.
Happen to a nicer person.
I have one additional item that is not on this list that I just remembered as we were talking, and it is Andy Cohen is daddy now.
He had his baby.
His baby. Benjamin?
Yes.
Benjamin, named after his father, his grandfather, one of those. It's a boy.
Yeah, we knew that.
Yep. It's here now.
Every single housewife posted the exact same picture that Andy posted.
And the small baby. I'm glad that the pictures are not like the Perez Hilton ones.
Yes. I mean, they never were going to
I
be.
Know, but just that fear is always there.
No one who's like that me. Good of friends with Anderson Cooper or whatever do that.
I just, again, the fear was always there. And I'm just happy that it didn't happen.
Yeah. The live show yesterday must have been pre-taped.
Yeah.
Or the live show on Sunday must have been pre-taped. Because I'm like, how on earth did you do all this?
I mean, how does she do it?
Yeah, I guess he probably, they probably knew when the
The child was being born, right? So congratulations to Andy.
To Papa Cohen.
Papa Cohen. That child will want for nothing.
Yeah.
So I don't know what else to say about that.
Yeah. Congratulations. Mazel.
Mazel, as Andy would say. Mazel to you, Andy. And that's all she wrote.
We are
the real Brady Bros.
Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who were you again?
I played Peter. We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
Today, I am so excited to have Molly Lambert. She is a prolific writer. She's written for The New York Times, Grantland, and more. And she's the host of the podcast Night Call. And she is here to talk with us about true crime documentaries.
Yay.
Hi, Molly.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Thanks for having me. Very excited.
Thank you so much for doing this. You're in LA and we're in New York. So it's nice that you were able to, that we were able to make it work.
Oh, yeah.
And just to be clear off the bat, you are the Black Dahlia killer, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful. Cool.
I've been hiding my identity all these years, but now you've unmasked me.
You also look so exclusive. Great for your age.
Thanks. And because I'm immortal.
That's great. Wonderful. That's wonderful. We have an exclusive with the Black Dahlia killer. You heard it here first. Okay. All right. Thanks, Maddie, for that.
So true crime documentaries are kind of at their peak right now in that, I don't know, they're coming out really rapidly. They're hard to keep up with. I mean, just some that have come out over the past few years. I think it kind of started with Serial, I feel like, where they had that big hit NPR did as a podcast. Molly, did you listen to that?
I did not, but I mean, I absorbed the discourse about it.
Yeah. Oof. I tried to, and I couldn't.
Oh, I listened to Serial, and I remember, I think I enjoyed it. 2014 seems like so long ago. I think I liked it, but maybe it was a more innocent time. I mean, I hated Sarah Koenig, and I still do. I stand by that, and I will till death.
Oh,
but,
okay.
Yep. I mean, Serial was, like, fine. It was, like, nice to be absorbed by something.
I think I was just always very uncomfortable with how the victim's family wasn't okay with it.
That did suck.
And it just felt like a very, like, one-sided story.
Yeah.
And I don't know, to, like, hear, like, if I just was thinking, if my, like, diary from when I was 16, 17 years old got read aloud to, like, a bunch of, like, thirsty-ass NPR listeners, I would be mortified.
I would want to die.
But that's kind of
It seemed exploitative, which I feel like is what you guys are saying we wanted to talk about today. It's kind of like, where's the line?
Yeah, exactly.
That one seemed exploitative.
Yeah, it's weird because it's like, I don't know. We also have like Making of a Murderer, Netflix 2015, The Jinx, which was a huge—
I love The Jinx.
Was a wild thing because Robert Durst outed himself as a murderer in the documentary. OJ Made in America was like a sprawling one. Mommy Dead and Dearest on HBO. The Keepers, Netflix. The Staircase was rebooted on Netflix. Wild Wild Country. Yeah, so there's just so many. And so I guess as a fan of these, Molly, what for you is the line?
Well, it depends. I mean, it's all kind of bad, I think, if you think about it. It's all like a little bit entertainment,
right.
capitalizing
yeah.
on people's deaths. I think when it's like an unsolved case, that makes people feel like they can like participate and help something happen, you know?
For sure.
Some of the documentaries, though, I feel like Making a Murderer or The Staircase, those are weird, too, because they're like sort of about whether or not the person is guilty. And it's very much like in the filmmaking, how it,
yeah.
and how it's edited, you know?
Right. Yeah, same with Serial too, where it's just like clearly Sarah Koenig had a perspective.
Yeah, she had her biases and she made them pretty clear from the jump. And I think, yeah, I agree with you about Making a Murderer and also the Jinx.
I haven't watched the Ted Bundy one because that one just grosses me out on principle. And I feel like that's the one that a lot of people have been like, too much.
Yeah. Like, I tried to watch it and it honestly is like, one, it's like they're just like so horny for Ted Bundy.
Ew.
And they're just like,
right, which is like, he's not hot. That's the real thing that's come up, I feel like, is people are like, what, he's not hot. The legend of him being hot and picking people up. It's like, no, he's like a creepy adult man who picked up like teenagers.
And again, he's like hot for like, compared to who? John Wayne Gacy? Like, sure.
Right. Within the realm of serial killers. And then there's, you know, people who are like, do you think he's hot? Mm. And I saw people just being like, what is wrong with people?
I know.
I mean, I agree. What is wrong with people? A question I ask every day upon waking.
That one, it's also very weird because before the podcast, I was talking to Megan about how I think I turned it off in episode 2 because there's this very weird montage of reporters talking about these dead women and like the amount of times they were just like, rape, dead bodies, bodies remained, raped, had sex with them, raped women, dead. And I'm just like, this is, feels like I'm watching like a poorly done American Vandal. Like, it's like that over the top and gross.
Yeah, it's definitely, you can overdo it. Like, I started watching a lot of Investigation Discovery a few years ago. Do you guys ever watch that channel?
I have not, but I know what it is.
The ID Network is all shows like that, and they have names like Wives with Knives, Who the Bleep Did I Marry?
Yes!
They're all just like, and like, then there will just be like 100 stories of people who married someone who turned out to be crazy and killed them. Oh. And like, 100 stories of like wives with knives, wives who killed their husbands for something. Those ones are more palatable, but there's a lot that are just like, a woman was abducted. A woman was minding her business.
Mm. Yeah.
And she was abducted and killed violently. And if you watch too many of those, it's like you cannot live your life at all.
Yeah. No, it's it can be debilitating. I don't know. Did you read I'll Be Gone in the Dark, that Michelle McNamara book about the Golden State Killer?
No, but I watched the 2020 special that summarized.
Mm. The book was good. I liked the book.
Yeah.
I was surprised that I liked the book, but I did.
I mean, it's one of those things that listening to it, reading it, like in my studio apartment by myself, was just sort of like, oh great, like I'm just going to get murdered. But in a way, it was comforting because I'm like, I've done everything I can to not get murdered. The rest is out of my hands.
Oh, I was going to say, people say that like women are the main audience for a lot of true crime stuff, which I guess makes sense.
Yeah.
Maybe because a lot of it is based around the idea that like the case will get solved and that's kind of like, it doesn't happen really in real life as much as you want to, you know?
Right.
Or so rarely. The idea of like a serial rapist being apprehended and like brought to justice is like so rare that I think we're all just like, oh, look, ethics in action.
I've always felt that way about Law and Order SVU in that it's like a fantasy world where like cops do their jobs and like treat victims with dignity.
Right. And everything is resolved neatly in the end, like an episode of House Hunters.
Or I don't know. At least it's like Olivia Benson cares.
Right.
Where it's sometimes like they have the depressing ending, but then it's like Olivia Benson like looking off into the distance like, oh, you can't win them all.
Right.
Because, I mean, technically you cannot. So that at least there's that for real life, for authenticity.
I mean, one of the interesting things about the book about the Golden State Killer is that it kind of was message boards that helped solve that case.
Mm-hmm.
Which I found so interesting in that, like, there's, like, these hobbyist detectives across the country who are, like, in the message boards of, like,
It's such a fine line between those people and, like, the Pizzagate people.
Yeah.
Right.
Or the people who are just murdering people.
Like, right. Like, the Pizzagate people think they're solving a mystery also.
Right.
So, using the power of the internet. it does seem dangerous to me for people. Or like, I feel like there's been a lot of stuff where like, didn't Reddit like falsely claim somebody was the Boston bomber once? Like some of that stuff too, I feel like people are like, we're going to solve the case. That it's like,
I think
we're going to spread misinformation.
Yeah, right.
I think that when like, I'm trying to remember. I remember after Serial finished, there was a lot of someone, there was someone in my life who became obsessed with the case, obsessed with Adnan's innocence, and like devoted the rest of like the rest of her career to trying to like prove that he was innocent in a way that I was just like, this is insane.
Wait, she changed her whole life?
She started doing, now she works on like, now she does other stuff that like, she started, there was like a podcast called, what's it called? Undisclosed, which is like the pod, if I can remember the details. It was a podcast that was put out by either a lawyer that was on Adnan's side or something like that, that was just like dedicated to like proving his innocence. And she was so convinced that he was innocent that she like started doing a lot of work with them and now does work with like other, not like cold, like reporting and podcasting around like not other cold cases per se, but around like stuff like that, like more crime case. I know it was, I thought that was crazy. And I,
there's something about giving over your whole life to something really obsessive like that, that I understand.
Yeah. You have a goal.
Yeah. Like I love Zodiac. Zodiac is one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. Cause it's sort of about just like the, you never can get the satisfaction of like, okay, it's done, you know, everything is solved now. And that you can just like spend your life trying to figure stuff like that out and never figure it out and go insane.
I feel like the Zodiac killer was slightly ruined for me. That's weird to say.
Spoiled.
I feel like this murderer was slightly ruined for me when like Ted Cruz started to embrace the narrative that he's the Zodiac killer.
That wasn't great.
Yeah, Ted Cruz trying to be in on the joke there was definitely...
Doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, I also think, like, it is a kind of at peak frenzy of these documentaries, but I don't know. Like, you were saying, where, like, there are channels devoted to this and have been for a while, and, like, Forensic Files is an amazing show.
It is. It's a good show.
The husband is always the one who did it.
Obviously.
And also just, like, America's Most Wanted, Unsolved Mysteries, like, Nightline, they all do these same, I don't know. I don't think people are, like, more like bloodthirsty now than they have been before.
I just think that
there's a lot of murder mystery that's fiction too, that is not based in real people's deaths. That feels less bad to consume.
Here's a question I have for you, Molly, and for you, Megan, is do you think that these documentaries make kind of the general population like afraid in a disproportionate way? Or like, these are really rare events.
Right.
Like, these are things that do not happen that often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, most women who are getting murdered are actually getting murdered in partner violence and, you know, that type of thing. So these are really exceptional cases. But with the amount of them, like, does it make you feel more afraid of these things? Does it make your friends feel more afraid of these things?
I feel like being afraid of serial killers is sort of like, it's such an abstract idea.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Like, people don't talk about, like, domestic violence and a lot of less, you know, like, not entertaining, but, like, less flashy.
Like, more pedestrian.
Types of violence.
Yeah.
Yeah, more regular types of violence. Yeah, and I mean, you had, like, the Firefest documentaries, which were about, like, white-collar crime.
Right.
Which there's like a really good white collar crime documentary called American Greed, hosted by Stacey Keach.
Ooh, I'd watch that.
And I love that one because it's all just about people like ripping people off for insane amounts of money. And like,
that sounds fine.
People don't get murdered so much on that
one.
That's good.
It's sad because people lose their life savings to people that are liars. But it's a lot of it is about sort of about how that system is like set up to reward scammers, you know,
for sure.
In the way that a lot of true crime documentaries end up being about like the corruption and failure of the police. Like that's what Making a Murderer is really about. Whether you think Stephen Stephen, what's his name, is guilty or not. It's just about how, like, the case was bobbled so badly by the cops.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is also, like, what the OJ thing is about, too. It's like...
And Serial.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, he did it, and they fucked up.
Yeah, exactly.
Both of, like, those things can be true.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that is what a lot of people miss in watching these documentaries, is that, like, it is not just about, did Adnan do it, you know?
Right.
It's about, like, yeah.
The larger.
It's how police work goes. It's how, right. I don't know. And I think people kind of get bored with that because we are, I don't know.
The, like, procedural, like, yeah.
Like, we're very, like, excitable chimps who just, like, want to,
violence.
Know, see
and they
something,
see, like,
yeah.
The flash and the gore. I mean, yeah, I do. Yeah, that is a good
Stephen
point.
Avery.
Avery, that's his last name.
Correct.
To answer your initial question, Maddie, none of these scare me. I don't know why.
That's I am so afraid of home invasion. That's like a huge thing for me.
But I feel like I have been, there was a home, someone broke into my house like 6 or 7 years ago and stole my laptop, which was on my nightstand while I was sleeping. And also,
oh, it's so scary.
Like something out, like two, yeah, other
that
things from my
me
house.
Want to throw up.
And I remember I was like, that's like the next morning I was, the only reason I found out, they stole my wallet or they like took my whole purse. And the only reason I found out is because someone had, I got like a call from the bank. And then I tried to like go get my card and my wallet was missing. And then my computer was missing and was whatever. For some reason I was not terribly scared. I was just kind of like, this is really annoying. The police came and they did like a whole, that they were like, you sure you weren't drunk the night before? Like, they tried to, like, pin it on me. Whatever, it was fine. And then also when I was really little, someone tried to break into our house, but our neighbor got him. And even though you would think that with these two things in my history, I would be, Maddie's looking at me, like, terrified.
No.
I'm just not, like, I don't know. None of these things scare me because I'm the idiot that's like, this will never happen to me.
That's very logical, but that is not who I am.
Right. Like, I will die of cancer before, like, a man, like, tries to abduct me or whatever. I mean,
knock on wood.
I will get abducted
also,
the minute
don't get cancer.
We leave this studio. I'll try not to get cancer, and I'll try not to get abducted.
Personally, the thing that scared me the most of anything, now that you're talking about this,
yeah.
Is, spoiler alert for a 20-year-old TV show.
Okay.
There's an episode of The Sopranos where somebody, a character I won't name, gets assaulted in a parking garage.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Is a very scary episode because it feels very realistic and,
right.
Again, sort of like a commonplace thing that you're like, totally. Oh, I don't want to be like on guard constantly all the time everywhere. I'm alone.
No one
but,
wants that.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, I think also as women, we're like, it's really just ingrained in our brains very early. Like, you are prey. Like,
anybody who's not a white dude, I feel like, has that feeling
for sure.
Yeah.
In the world. And that's why it's also like there's something about the fact that a lot of these serial killers are mediocre white dudes and then that they get sort of like a cult of personality around them is gross, you know?
So gross.
I feel like especially with Ted Bundy, that's what I've been feeling is like,
yeah,
no, let's not give this person any attention.
Right.
I've noticed that there kind of has been more of a consensus on that with the Ted Bundy tapes than with anything else. Like, I feel like they're, I don't know, maybe there's like a slight turning of the tides or like a fatigue that the general audience
is
having.
There is a fatigue. I think there's too much at this point. People are reaching the saturation point.
Yeah.
Something that I just thought about that we didn't include on the list, but that was sort of like what I guess I would view as like a misstep in the attempt to sort of cash in on this, in this widespread interest, was that, can't remember what it was called now, the podcast that looked, the Richard Simmons podcast.
Oh, Missing.
Missing Richard Simmons. I mean, obviously there was no crime there. There was no, something about that podcast, which I listened to, and I remember thinking, feeling like bad and gross about it because that podcast did not, I don't think, handled itself correctly. But like, I think there have been, because of the interest and because people are seeing that, you know, shit like this makes money, like that kind of misstep was interesting to me because I felt like that tried really hard to like be a sort of serial adjacent. It sort of also reminded me of S-Town.
That one I did not listen to. That was a podcast, right?
S-Town, yeah, it was. It was. But I don't know. Do you think that that has any, if I'm making any sense here? Like if that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there's so many podcasts.
No. I mean, just like those two, like S-Town and S-Town and the Missing Richard Simmons ones were kind of like, to me, felt like offshoots of the true crime genre.
And the Missing Richard Simmons one was also one that made people be like, this is gross. Like, this is like not, you know, you can't just be like a citizen investigator of anything. Like, there is a thing of invading people's privacy, especially if you're trying to make a profit a show about it, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
That one in particular, because it was like, okay, Richard Simmons is gone from the public eye. He like obviously has his reasons, and it's like not up to you to draw him back out.
Right.
Definitely.
And if he doesn't want to be found, then like leave him alone.
What are some of your favorites?
Good question. I love The Staircase. The Staircase was the first one that I, like, my friends are like, it's a 8-hour documentary about a guy who may or may not have pushed his wife down the stairs. That one, I feel like it does, you just go back and forth so many times. And at the end, you're like, I have no idea if he did it or not.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter because she's dead.
Right.
You know, it's, and that one's good. I like the ones that are about, like, true crime documentaries.
Yeah, the ones that are a little bit more in-depth and less just, like...
sensational.
Yeah.
Well, the ones that admit they're taking a side, I feel like, are more honest also.
Sure. Yeah. I feel like there's also a pretty, like, when you talk about, like, white-collar crime documentaries, there's, like, kind of a Schadenfreude involved of, like, being like, oh, like, rich people got screwed over. Like,
mm-hmm.
It can be somewhat... less pressing than just like, oh, like this lady just got stabbed to death.
Right.
Yeah, although in the Firefest one, it ended, not that I have watched it, but I know that it's about sort of like the exploitation of the service workers.
Yeah, the people in Exuma.
In the place where it was supposed to be. So that one, also depressing.
Yeah, real life is a bummer.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of these are just sort of about like, you know, privilege and like what people can get away with if people are predisposed to let them.
And you can say that about these like murderers too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, that's the thing about Ted Bundy is like everybody put him on constantly because they were like, oh, look, he's tall and white and has a chin, you know.
A chin like, will get you really far.
Again, those are our standards, very low.
Yeah, it's such a low bar. And like, he's a serial killer. Like,
yeah.
You know, people were saying that the whole time it's about how people were like, oh, he's such a promising young man. And it's like, it's gross.
That's the shit I hate.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like interesting because it makes you think and talk about it, but it's illuminating. But yeah, it doesn't, I don't need anything that contributes to like a cult of serial killer idolization.
It was also sort of funny with Wild Wild Country, how people like sort of, I don't know, I saw a lot of like Rajneesh Halloween costumes.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot
Wild
of people
Wild
did.
Country, I think people liked because it was a female sociopath.
Yeah.
Which is less, you know, you get less in those documentaries and because nobody died.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
my feeling about it. It's like.
Didn't people die? Didn't they poison people?
But they didn't die, I don't think.
Yeah, but they didn't die. They just got sick.
Okay.
They're like fine. Yeah, they like, yeah, they were fine. I mean, they
were
sick.
They were fine, which makes it fine. But people were so taken with her to a point that was also kind of insane where you were like.
I didn't love that.
No, no, it's not good for anyone to be a sociopath.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need like, that's like the more female drone pilots thing. Like, we don't need more female serial killers.
Right.
That's not going to be feminism.
There was like a weird like empowerment narrative, I think, around what was her name?
Sheila.
Thank you. Around Sheila.
I mean, the thing I liked about it was that they were like ripping off a lot of white hippies who were like looking for something to be ripped off by. You know?
Yeah. No, that was
they
nice.
Were taking advantage of people who like wanted to be taken advantage of. So it seemed kind of almost like consensual, you know,
mm-hmm, for sure.
Consensual exploitation.
Totally. It's
sort of similar to the... Yeah.
Which, again, made that one okay to me more so. But then there was another one that came out right after that. I forget what it's called, but it's the one about the pizza bomber.
Oh, yeah. The something... Oh, Evil Genius.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, it's not called 30 Minutes or Less. That's the movie they made based on the story as a comedy.
Right.
But that one, I was like avoiding watching because it made me feel so gross, kind of. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up watching it over the holidays.
Cheery.
And it was really interesting because it was another like female sociopath. And I was like, wow, yeah. Like nobody really, people weren't flocking to this lady the same way they were, even though it came out right after. You'd think there would be more of a hive for this woman who arranged all these murders.
Yeah, I think that was another one that I was... They, like, showed someone dying in the first episode. Oh. And that
yeah,
was
that's the whole thing. I was like, okay, I'll check it out. And then that, like, show someone's head blowing up in the first 5 minutes. And I was like, why am I watching this?
Yeah.
This is a horrible idea. But the thing that's interesting about that one is the woman who sort of set up all the things. She's the mastermind. And everybody talks about her in the documentary. It's like, oh, she just, like, she seduced me. And, like, she enchanted me and put a spell on me. And then she's like this very sort of regular looking woman, but she's very crazy and self-confident. And that,
yeah, that gets you places.
Yeah. Found fascinating.
Like, that's what we should take that and go forth in life, women, but leave the murder behind.
Leave the murder part at home.
Do you, in general, I know you said that you're a big fan of the movie Zodiac. Do you like this type of like thriller when it's fiction?
Yeah, I mean, I also liked Gone Girl. I like a thriller that's good. I just watched Basic Instinct again. I like a movie where people get murdered in San Francisco. but no, I'm not like a furious consumer of that kind of stuff generally. There's just so much of it in the ether, like you were saying. Like, I watch Sharp Objects.
Yeah.
I couldn't get through that.
I watched it.
I read the book, Patricia Clark couldn't do it.
Do anything.
Yeah.
I liked it. It seems like... sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, it's languorous. It's just long and...
Yeah, it was very southern.
Sharp Objects.
Yeah.
I think I just lost... Like, I tried the first episode and was like... and then turned it off.
A lot of, like, sipping cocktails on a porch. So thank you so much for spending this hour with us. It means a lot that you were willing to make some time to talk about this very creepy subject.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on, guys.
This has been a pleasure.
Talking about true crime documentaries with you.
Anytime.
Anytime.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening to Dirtcast, and thank you to Molly Lambert. Manana Mofidi is our executive director of audio. This episode was mixed by Corey Schreffel. Our theme music is by Stuart Wood. Wanna send us a tip or just let us know what you think? You can email us at dirtcast@jezebel.com. Please rate and review us on wherever you get your podcasts. Also, follow us on Twitter @DirtcastPod.